Greetings and welcome to the Chalcedon Hour. My name is Steve Schlissel. I am the pastor of Messiah's Congregation in Brooklyn, New York, and I have the privilege of speaking tonight to Russos John Rushdoony, who is the founder and president of the Chalcedon Foundation in Vallecito, California. Now, I'm going to tell you now, I'll tell you again later, so that you can write to the Chalcedon Foundation because they have literature that you will want to have in your library. To write to Chalcedon, that's C-H-A-L-C-E-D-O-N, Box 158, Vallecito, California, V-A-L-L-E-C-I-T-O, and the zip code is 95251. Last time we were together, Rush, we were speaking about the doctrine of creation and its fundamental importance to a proper Christian worldview. Can you reiterate how foundational the proper view of creation is to proper thinking?
Yes. Without creationist thinking, the whole of the Bible is warped. We soon have a very different Bible, and every doctrine is affected by our disbelief in creationism. Creationism tells us that God is the author of all things. All things came into being by his fiat word. Now, as I indicated last time, the miracle required by evolutionary thinking is greater. It requires millions of and millions of miracles, contrary to science, for something to appear out of nothing, and with each change or variation, more miracles are required.
Yes, indeed. Now, also in evolutionary worldviews, we have, in one form or another, behind everything is an impersonal God, if they have anything at all. What's the importance in the Christian doctrine of the personalness of the Creator?
Well, the personalness of the Creator means that it is a world of responsibility. If God were impersonal, it would be an amazing thing. It would be, as with evolution, endless miracles by some mindless thing. And instead of that, we have purpose throughout all of creation.
What's the significance of the fact that Adam and Eve were created in mature form?
Yes. You have to have a mature creation in some sense. Because if you say it began with a spark of life and nothing more, that first atom, that first spark of life, whatever it was, is still potentially everything that the Christian God is. Because all things come from him, or from it. In the case of the spark, so that you cannot evade the fact of a miraculous origin. Something that, whether you call it God or not, is comparable to God.
So you're going to place the attributes of God, in other words, somewhere, either in your made-up miraculous beginning, the spark of potentiality, or are you going to place those attributes where God actually reveals that they are to be found in himself, the personal God? Now, this makes us quite accountable, doesn't it? The fact that we're created by a personal God. Maybe that's why evolution has caught on so wildly among people, that by having an impersonal origin, you escape accountability.
Exactly. You remove from the world any responsibility and accountability, and you have a world and things in which things happen, and you are not guilty of them.
Did God create Adam with a law to follow?
Yes. We have a law given from the beginning, and then the written law. And the written law as given presupposes a knowledge of itself on the part of the people.
When When God created Adam, there are things that theologians refer to as creation ordinances.
Yes.
Let's discuss these a moment.
Very good.
The Bible, and later on the Puritans recovering biblical teaching, reveals that the family is what they sometimes call the seminary of the church and the state. In other words, that the family is the fundamental institution. If we do away with the first chapters of Genesis, aren't we sort of jettisoning the whole family foundation of culture and society?
Yes, we are, and the whole concept of personality. Life at its most intimate places is, from the biblical perspective, all the more personal. Instead of an impersonal development and growth, you have a highly personal and responsible one. This is why one of the things that we do with children immediately is, on birth, we begin very firmly but slowly and surely to train them. We have first a training in the time of eating as soon as possible, then a time for their bowel movements, then a time for their sleeping and waking, because we find an order, a purpose, a meaning is basic to life. And so the child is no sooner born than he is born into such a purposive world and begins to conform to it.
So it's important for Christians then to rear their children in a way that helps them to understand that they are born into a world that they did not create, and they must adopt the order that was there before they got there.
Yes. The world has a given, a God-given order, and we enter into it on His terms and must obey those terms.
Now, this is quite contrary to the prevailing wisdom of the day.
Yes.
That seeks man's essence and meaning in immaturity and in primalism.
That's right. Unless we have a biblical point of view, man's meaning is read in terms of primitiveness, and that's why the child is read in terms of, the adult in terms of the child in terms of primitive man in terms of the animals which supposedly preceded him, on back to what Van Til called integration into the void. Integration into the void is the inescapable result of non-creationist thinking.
In other words, then, if you posit or you start your thinking about life and the world by saying it arose out of nothing, when you're going to look for meaning, you'll work backwards until you go into nothing again.
Exactly.
And on the other hand, if meaning comes from the God who created the world and revealed himself in the Bible, then meaning is to be found, when it appears to be lost, by returning to him.
Yes, we live then in a world of total meaning.
Everywhere we turn, then, there's meaning.
Yes. That's why one modern existentialist philosopher said that if there is one fact in all the universe that has meaning, then that substantiates God.
So then we really have a totality in worldviews. It's all or nothing.
Yes.
Now, what about this popularity of Rousseau and Thoreau with this noble savage idea, and man's happiness is found in returning to nature, and these natural religions that are becoming more popular nowadays? Is that related to a rejection of the doctrine of creation?
Yes, it is. And the result is what you had in Woodstock, too, which was supposed to celebrate this happy, peaceful world of natural man, and became a nightmare for the police before it was over.
So this noble savage idea is something that's more or less a myth, isn't it?
It is not only a myth, but a very dangerous one.
Why is that?
Because it leads increasingly to a world in which you trust man when you should trust God. Man is fallen. If you try to trust man, you'll be robbed, you'll be defrauded at every step of the way, because man, being naturally fallen, is going to do those things which are evil. It's a completely warped picture we have today, and our false view of man has led to the breakdown of discipline in one sphere after another. We used to have in education a highly disciplined structure from day one, because it still had the framework of creationism. Now, even in kindergarten, teachers are complaining of the lawlessness of the children who come to them.
So then we are looking at the building of a Christian and consistent worldview. We absolutely must begin with the doctrine of creation.
Yes.
We must include the personalness of God that gives meaning to every fact. And then we also include the law of God, that is that which reflects his preferences and his desires, in order that we may discover the order that God has already put in the world and then find our places in it.
Yes. God is totally personal. There is no unconscious in his being. And therefore, he is totally responsible. And the more we grow in him, the more responsible we become.
Now, when God created Adam and Eve, then, he created them in terms of an order that was his express will.
Yes.
The Dutch theologians have talked about looking at the sin that was recorded in the third chapter of Genesis. And they said that the way God created the world, you had God over all, and under him man, and under and alongside man, woman, and under them the animals. But
yeah.
The sinful rebellion was the animal determining reality by telling Eve what would be, she assuming Adam's role, and then God being placed on the bottom altogether. In other words, it was a complete inversion of the created order. Would you think that was an accurate picture?
Yes, I do. At the minute you diminish the doctrine of God, you diminish man also. The minute you introduce any element of unconsciousness into God or into the ultimate order of things, you eliminate consciousness as important in the life of man, and you feel that his instincts should rule him more than his reason.
And sin always has the character, it seems, of rebellion against the order imposed by God.
Yes.
Well, can we ever escape from the imposition of an order? If men think that men are not willing to live without order, are they?
No, they're not. And it's a curious fact. The more they rebel against God's order, the more they create a tyranny on earth.
Yeah.
Because man is not God. He cannot ordain things and bring them to pass peacefully. And so man, in his effort to play God, becomes a tyrant.
Well, in order for man to bring about anything at all, he would have to have this godlike quality of total control and
yes.
total knowledge.
And that's why whenever man loses faith in God, he begins to be a tyrant.
And he expresses that tyranny through a centralization of power in the state?
Exactly. The state becomes a substitute for God.
Well, let me just run down a little rabbit trail for a second and ask. There are many people in the United States and in Canada and other Western countries who are concerned about centralization of power, but they think that they could make a difference without bringing back a return to faith in the God of the Bible. In other words, it's just a strict conservatism.
Yes.
Is there a fatal flaw in that approach?
Yes, the flaw is that it rests on a view of man in which man, having developed out of nothing, has as most basic to his being his unconscious urges, and therefore he is not ruled by a knowledge of that which is good, but is ruled by his instinctual past. The result is, man is basically then very dangerous, an animal without control.
We are speaking with Rusas John Rushdoony, who is the president and founder of the Chalcedon Foundation. You should make a note of this. I'm going to give you this address, and I'll even give you a phone number to call, because you should ask them to send you some material. Listen, for $16, that's 13 plus 3 for the shipping and handling, you can have a copy of the Journal of Christian Reconstruction Symposium on the Family. There are some timely articles in here that you will find most profitable, and you can order this by writing to Chalcedon, Chalcedon, Box 158, in Vallecito, Vallecito, California, 95251. Now, if you'd like to simply get on the mailing list to receive the journal, or the weekly, the monthly Chalcedon report, you send a donation to that address, and you'll be added to the list. This is remarkable material that is profitable for you to be built up in the knowledge of the Word of God and how it applies to every area of life. Because as you've heard today, the knowledge that we have from the Bible is not just a little piece that pertains to personal salvation, but it is a comprehensive and total worldview. And Mr. Rushdoony has devoted his life and ministry to helping people to see and understand just how it applies. Now, Rush, the basic thing that people need to get in touch with again today, after they've understood the importance of creation, is that that is where you'll find the establishment of the family on an irrefutable foundation.
Yes.
Too many people are arguing today for the family values and so on without recognizing that without the God who created the family and the family order, they're just one opinion against another.
Yes. The family has a religious foundation. It begins and ends under God. The purpose of the family is to be the cradle of life, to be the nurturer of mankind. It also sets the pattern of a concern one for another. It is an error when we speak of the family of man. God is the father of all mankind.
In a general sense.
In a general sense, and therefore, he has set forth his purpose for mankind primarily in the family. The family is man's first church, his first economic order, his first school, of course, and at one point after another, it is where he gets his basic introduction to all the basic areas of life. And therefore, when you undermine and destroy the family, you harm education, you harm religion, you harm social life, because you create, instead of the family as the fundamental order, an evolutionary struggle for survival, dog eating dog, which means a lawless society as your foundation.
So if family, for example, evolves, then what man created or what is created by some blind evolution is subject to redefinition, either
yes,
by majority opinion or by manipulation.
It continually is subject to change. So that there are no hard and fast rules, no hard and fast premises or principles to life in any area.
Rush, have you heard some neoconservatives arguing against the homosexual lobby And, for example, the particular argument that's being waged some places that they want the legalization of homosexual marriages. And sometimes they just say, well, most people in most cultures have been opposed to this. That becomes a very weak argument, doesn't it?
Yes, it does, because if you have no absolute good and evil, then the redefinition of good and evil in every generation becomes tenable.
So then it sounds ridiculous today, but so did some other things.
Yes.
You can have a man marrying an animal.
Yes.
And actually, throughout history, there have been times when people have done those abominable things.
Very definitely. And it's beginning on the sly to be a common opinion again.
Some people don't realize, Rush, that there's nothing that God forbade in the Word that hadn't been practiced by someone somewhere.
Yes.
So if you find a law against it issued by God, you can be sure that man is that depraved that he'd stoop to that level.
Well, the Marquis de Sade was accurate when he said, if there is no God, there can be no law. Therefore, for him, murder, rape, adultery, homosexuality, everything was natural and therefore legal. He recognized that unless you posited the supernatural, God, you could have no law of any kind binding men anywhere. So his world was one of everything goes. And in particular, he advocated things which you and I would call totally evil, because it was his way of saying, this is the true order, one without God. Or, better, this is disorder and therefore the truth.
So he was at least being more consistent than some in worldview application.
Yes, and it is interesting that his writings were for generations forbidden. They were illegal to publish. But suddenly, after World War II, they were not only published, but editions of them sometimes with about half the space devoted to amazing defenses of them on the part of prominent philosophers.
And feminists, ironically.
Oh, surely.
It's an amazing time in which to live to see what Van Til called epistemological self-consciousness. And that,
yes,
for our listeners, that means when your basic faith presuppositions, where you start in your faith, when it comes to fruition so that it can be seen. Now, we're seeing the development and maturation of evil in our time. Do you think there'll also be a time when we see a further maturation of self-conscious Christianity?
Without a faith in God, yes, anything will go. What Van Til called what we are seeing around us today was this: integration into the void. Integration downward, not upward. That's what happens to evolutionary theory, to an anti-creationist point of view. Without God, you're going to have integration downward into the void.
Well, I want to speak on our next show, if we can, about how we can return to a biblical standard for living and a biblical idea of the family and the order and the models that we have in the creation account. I've been speaking with Rusus John Rushdoony, the president and founder of the Chalcedon Foundation. You can write to him at Box 158, Vallecito, California, that's Vallecito, 95251. This is Pastor Steve Schlissel, the pastor of Messiah's Congregation in Brooklyn, New York, thanking you for the privilege of bringing you the thoughts and meditations of Rusus John Rushdoony this evening, and we look forward to you being with us again in the next time slot that we can be together. The Lord bless you. We'll see you soon.